Disclaimer.
You must not rely on information on our website or broadcast it as an alternative to medical advice from your doctor or other professional healthcare provider. If you have any specific questions about any medical matter, you should consult your doctor or other professional healthcare provider. If you think you may be suffering from any medical condition, you should seek immediate medical attention. You should never delay seeking medical advice, disregard medical advice, or discontinue medical treatment because of the information on our website or that which has been broadcasted by us. Welcome to Inside Health, dear friends. Today we're going to have an interesting show, like always. My name is Elham Fakhri, the presenter for this show. And as usual, I'll be discussing a health topic. Today it'll be a little bit unusual than the other episodes I've done previously. It'll be discussing a bit of rare conditions and rare diseases, considering the majority of the people that live on this planet and the amount of diseases out there. I thought instead of focusing on the most common ones like I have previously, I should discuss some of the most rare diseases that a lot of people have most likely seen in documentaries on BBC or on the internet when they have went to YouTube and searched for something and somehow ended up to looking at that some very rare condition. So I'll be focusing on those conditions a little bit. And at the same time, I'll be sharing some of their stories through their own mouth, so to say. I'll have little clips playing here and there about these conditions and about these people throughout the show, as well as give a little sort of brief introduction into what that disease is. Now, majority of these diseases are extremely rare, one in a million or one in 100,000 or very, very, very rare diseases. And majority of them are also in developmental countries. So it'll be interesting to sort of see how these diseases affect their daily lives. And as there are, for some of them, there are no cures or no treatments at the moment. So it does affect them quite massively, considering that some of them might be living in poor conditions. So when they have one of these rare diseases, it even makes things worse for them, so to say. But prior to that, as usual, I'll discuss a little bit about what's been on the news, on medical news, on BBC and other websites, just to give a brief idea of what's happening in the world of medicine to the listeners. So one of the news out there on BBC was that the spinal cord injury may respond to cancer drug. Now, a group of drugs being tested for cancer could also be used to treat spinal cord injuries, and this was a study done in mice. And the preliminary results could be used for in approximately 10-20 years' time. This data would be very useful into transferring to the clinic. So how it basically worked, what mice treated with cancer drugs called Nutlins recovered much more movement than those left untreated. The Imperial College London researchers said that drugs should now be tested in rats and could be tested in human patients within roughly 10 years' time. There are currently no proven effective treatments for spinal cord injuries. Such injuries can affect patients' ability to feel or move parts of their body below the injury. The damage is often permanent because it is very difficult to make spinal cord nerves regrow. The study was published in the journal Brain, and it used drugs which have been found to be safe in early cancer trials. In the research on adult mice, the drug stopped a particular series of proteins from interacting to restrict nerve growth. Normally used to suppress tumors in the mice with partially severed spinal cords, they were able to make nerves regrow in the affected area. This meant that 75% of the mice went from being paralyzed to being able to walk on a ladder, which is quite amazing results. Mice which were not treated with the cancer drugs only made a slight recovery in their movement. Now, Professor Simone Di Giovanni, Italian professor from the Department of Medicine at Imperial College London, who led the study, said, "Unlike in the limbs, nerves in the spinal cord don't regenerate after an injury, and he also mentioned that they're only just beginning to understand the fundamental reasons for this striking difference between limb nerves and spinal cord nerves. They've also identified a mechanism that controls nerve regeneration, and there are already experimental drugs that target this pathway, suggesting an opportunity to translate these findings into the clinic. And he also went on to say that although the results in mice were very encouraging, they now had to be replicated in studies in rats whose spinal cords more closely resembled those of humans. So although it is at a very early stage, just like most research is at this moment, this could be crucial for spinal cord injuries and potentially help a lot of people in the future who suffer from such injuries. Now the second one was on a lung cancer drug. The second medical news that I'm going to share with you guys, a lung cancer therapy can more than double life expectancy in some patients. A trial found so the drug nivolumab stops cancer cells hiding from the body's own defenses, leaving the cancer vulnerable to attack. And the results from 582 people presented at the American Society of Clinical Oncology were described as giving real hope to patients. Now, lung cancer is the most deadly type of cancer. I've given a talk on this on one of the previous shows, and it kills nearly 1.6 million people every year. It's hard to treat as it is, often diagnosed late, and many people with smoking-related diseases are unsuitable for surgery. And now, just to briefly discuss how this drug works. Just I'll briefly talk about the natural defenses. So your immune system is trained to fight infection, but it also attacks parts of the body if they malfunction, such as in cancer. However, tumors have a few tricks up their sleeves in order to survive. So they can produce a protein called PD-L1, which switches off any part of the immune system that tries to attack them. Now, nivolumab is one of a suite of drugs called checkpoint inhibitors, and being developed by pharmaceutical companies. They stop cancers turning off the immune system so the body can keep on attacking the tumor. Now I'll briefly discuss a little bit about how the trial works. So the trial was conducted in Europe and the US. It was on patients who had advanced lung cancer and who had already tried other treatments. People on standard therapy lived for another 9.4 months at this stage, but those taking nivolumab lived for 12.2 months on average. However, some patients did spectacularly well. Those whose tumors were producing high levels of PD-L1 lived for another 19.4 months. The data was presented by the pharmaceutical company Bristol-Myers Squibb. Lead researchers Dr. Luis Pazares from the hospital Universitario Dolce de Octubre in Madrid, Spain, said, this is a milestone in the development of new treatment options for lung cancer. Now, nivolumab is the first PD-1 inhibitor to show a significant improvement in overall survival in a phase 3 trial in non-squamous, non-small cell lung cancer. And many other companies are assessing similar drugs. Dr. Martin Foster from the University College London Cancer Institute is trialing some of them. And he told the BBC News website that it's really exciting, and he thinks these drugs will be a shift in how lung cancer is treated. He also said that after chemotherapy failed, current survival rates were very minimum. But in those that respond to immunotherapy, there seems to be very prolonged disease control. And he also thinks that a huge shift in lung cancer, and for patients, it's going to be very dramatic, this new approach. Cancer Research UK said harnessing the immune system would be an essential part of cancer treatment. Dr. Alan Worsley, the charity's senior science information officer, told the BBC, "This trial shows that blocking lung cancer's ability to hide from immune cells may be better than current chemotherapy treatments." Advances like these are giving a real hope for lung cancer patients who have until now had very few options. It is hoped these drugs will work in a range of cancers. Nivolumab has already been approved in the US for melanoma, but there are still big questions to be answered, such as the long-term consequences of modifying the immune system. They're still unknown, and the best way of figuring out who will respond to therapy, that is still uncertain. And these therapies are also likely to be very expensive, and so definitely will pose a challenge for health services trying to offer them. Now, money is quite a major issue within the NHS particularly. And there's quite a restricted amount of budgets that they can spend on a particular treatment or particular method. So it will be quite challenging when these private companies are selling these drugs. Now, I'll move on slowly to discussing about these rare conditions. Now, I have listed roughly 10 different rare conditions that I'll discuss about. And they are quite unique and unusual sort of diseases from the most common ones that we are used to seeing, at least in this Western world sort of areas. But nonetheless, they do affect the lives of the patients who are affected. So although a lot of these are documented some of these people go through quite a lot of difficulties as well, because of the nature of the disease, a lot of people make fun of them when they see them because they don't understand the disease particularly. So it's very very good for people to have sort of some sort of information about disease and how they work. It's not a circus show or anything in any way, and people should be aware of that it is actually a disease and it does affect people's life quite a lot. Now, the first one I'll discuss about is called fibrodysplasia ossificans progressiva, and in just normal language, that is stone man syndrome. And how it basically works, it's a progressive genetic disorder that turns soft tissues into bone over time. The ACVR1 gene found in bone, muscles, tendons, and ligaments regulates growth and development of those tissues and is normally responsible for turning cartilage into bone as children develop. However, mutations of this gene can allow ossification to go unchecked throughout a sufferer's life, even turning skeletal muscle into bone and causing joints to fuse together. This disorder occurs in about 1 in 2 million people, and there are currently no treatments or cures. Trauma exacerbates the condition, so attempts to remove bone surgically just results in the body producing even more bone in that area. So it is as you can imagine, how difficult it would be if all your muscles and all your soft tissue in the body turned into bone. It would restrict your movement heavily, and it will affect your daily life quite a lot as well. So next I'll play a little clip of a person who's going through such a condition, just briefly describing just his daily life. So this is Stone Man's disease, a little clip from a news article that I picked.
Muscles turning to bone. It sounds unreal, and to most people it is.
For one man in Pocatello, it's just everyday life. He has an extremely rare condition known as Stone Man's disease. A local News 8's Kylie Burse had a chance to sit down with him.
Spending an afternoon with Edmund Cook is easy.
I told you, ma'am, I can entertain you for hours.
And he's not kidding.
I'm an author. I have done two of my own books and worked on two others. I was in a math class in high school when I designed a game I called Dimension. I'm a rebel rouser.
That's just the beginning. He even ran for mayor a few years back. His office, his couch.
You want it emailed?
See, 85% of Ed's soft tissue has turned into bone.
I went from one day being able to drive a car, ride a bicycle, play basketball, play ping pong, to that night where I tripped in a parking lot, and the next morning my leg wouldn't bend.
He's one of just 700 in the world who has fibrodysplasia ossificans progressiva, or FOP. Over his lifetime, bones grow where muscle is.
It was literally that quick.
All the studies say there's no treatment. You can't do surgery. The bones formed from trauma. But Ed's taking an unconventional approach.
Well, I started doing massive amounts of calcium.
It sounds counterintuitive.
We thought there was too much calcium, but we learned that the body was starving for calcium, and the disease has been pretty much, if not reversed, held at me.
Amazingly, Ed can still stand and even walk with a little help.
I'm a fighter. I'm a tenacious booger.
That's not changing anytime soon. Ed's one of 10 kids and has a daughter of his own.
If I need something, they're there. And they don't get called often. But if I need them, they're there. We were taught to work.
Which is exactly what he does. From books to calling into radio shows, even building his own wheelchair ramp.
Perception is the key to success, regardless of who you are or where you are.
Words of advice on our afternoon together.
The world's not done hearing from me.
Reporting in Pocatello, I'm Kylie Burse.
Oh, what a great...
Welcome back, guys. So that was just Edmund Cook's story and how he survives. Just to sort of emphasize once again, it is literally every 80% of his soft tissue was turned into bone. So that limited his way of speech and his way of movement quite heavily. Now, if you can imagine being stiff and then everything in your body made out of bone, you can imagine how difficult that would be for a person to carry out daily activities. But still, as you saw, he was still very pushing, and he was doing daily activities, writing books, and doing amazing things with his life. So people should always concentrate on the person and their actual nature rather than the sort of diseases, that's something that they can't do anything about, and be helpful to them when possible. This was one of the most rarest conditions out there, so 1 in 2 million people suffering, and Edmund Cook being one of 700 people known to be diagnosed with this condition. So very rare condition, and very hard to sort of do daily activities if you're suffering from a condition like this. Now, majority of these diseases that I'll mention will have no cure or treatment at the moment, but they have sort of minor things which can be done to them to lower the pain or just make their lives a bit more comfortable. The next disease I'll talk about is Cotter's delusion, which is walking corpse syndrome. Now, Cotter's delusion is a rare mental disorder in which a person sincerely believes he or she is missing body parts such as the brain, or is actually dead. Some people actually might think that they're dead. So sufferers tend not to eat or bathe, and they often spend time in cemeteries wishing to be among their own kind. Well, their perceived own kind at any rate. This disorder has been connected to a dysfunction in the areas of the brain responsible for recognizing and associating emotions with faces, including their own. This causes a complete emotional detachment and removes any sense of personal identity when looking at their bodies. Medications can be used to treat the condition, though electroconvulsive therapy has worked in some cases. Now, once again, this is a very rare condition where people think that they're completely dissociated from their bodies, and it's a very difficult disease to live with. Now, next, I'll just briefly share a little clip of a person who's going through such a condition, reported in. So this is a British man diagnosed with walking corpse syndrome, and it'll be interesting to just hear his thoughts.
A man who goes by the name Graham woke up 9 years ago believing that he had died. The condition surfaced after Graham, who had been suffering from depression, tried to commit suicide. He told doctors that his brain was either dead or missing, and based on his brain scans, his self-diagnosis wasn't far off. His physicians compared his brain activity to someone who was in a vegetative state or under anesthesia. Graham had lost interest in just about everything, including eating and speaking. The only thing he had the desire to do was go to the graveyard because he felt he would fit in there. He was eventually diagnosed with Cotard syndrome and has experienced some improvement since starting a regimen of therapy and drugs. Cotard syndrome, or walking corpse syndrome, is an extremely rare affliction and there is no known cure. It is believed it stems from a combined lack of ability to recognize faces and locate emotions. This leads a person to disconnect from reality and believe that they are dead, non-existent, or decomposing.
Welcome back, guys. So that was Graham's sort of short story about Cotter's delusion or walking corpse syndrome. Now, you can imagine once again how difficult life must be if you are constantly under the thought of that you're dead, or you have no complete awareness of what's happening around you, no emotional attachments, nothing. So as you can imagine, how difficult for a person like that would be to live in the society that we live in. So they tend to go to graveyards, and that's where they feel that that's their environment, and they feel fit in. So once again, another sort of very rare condition, but at the same time, it affects a person who's suffering from such a condition. It affects their life massively, and it has major consequences on how they see life, or how they just live on generally. Now, the next rare condition that I'll talk about is called cold urticaria, which is basically meaning allergic to cold. Now, you can imagine that if you're allergic to cold, how difficult life would be, especially if you're living up north or if you're living in a cold country. Basically, that's how this works, is contact to cold air or water can trigger a histamine reaction, just like an allergy to bees or nuts. This can cause itchy hives and swelling in the affected areas. And those who have severe conditions can experience extreme swelling of the throat and tongue, which can actually be fatal. It isn't clear what causes this condition, though it can be treated with common antihistamines used for those who suffer from pet or seasonal allergies. Now, once again, this is a very rare condition, and it does affect a person's life quite massively. So when you have to go outside, you'd have to literally just cover up with a lot of layers of clothes. Air conditioning could be a problem as well. Cold water, if you drink cold water or cold fizzy drinks or cold anything, it restricts you from eating ice cream. And the majority of other things. So once again, you have to live a very limited life. And here, once again, I have a little clip of a person who has cold allergy, and she'll briefly describe her condition and discuss how her daily activities are like.
Some, like Melissa Curlin, are allergic to it. It's called cold urticaria.
And then, like, you're allergic to what?
It is possible for people to become allergic to the cold.
My ears would get numb. They'd feel like they were kind of burning when I came back.
And she'd get hives. So whenever Melissa heads out in temperatures below 45 degrees, she bundles up.
Heavy coat, mittens.
It's not just cold weather that causes problems. Melissa can't eat ice cream or drink cold liquids.
You know, my throat would just close up, swell up.
Or swim in cool water.
With extreme cold exposure or total body exposure, there can be a massive release of histamine and significant body swelling, even drop in blood pressure. And this could be a life-threatening situation.
Dr. James Lee says in some people, the cold, like many allergens, triggers mast cells in your immune system to release histamine and other chemicals. This causes affected skin tissue to become inflamed, red, itchy, and swollen. And if this reaction happens in an area such as your throat, you could be in trouble. Melissa takes antihistamines every day and carries an epinephrine auto-injector. So how do you know if you're allergic to the cold? Take the ice cube test.
The ice cube challenge involves putting an ice pack on your forearm to see if there's a reaction. If I were allergic to the cold, this patch would be red and raised.
Melissa's was, and now she enjoys the winter weather from the inside looking out. Melissa also has to be careful about air conditioning, which could cause her skin temperature to drop. Dr. Lee says there's no way to tell who will become allergic to the cold. It's rare, but if you suspect you might be, talk to an allergist to see if you should restrict any cold-related activities. For Medical Edge, I'm Vivian Williams.
Welcome back, guys. That was Melissa's story about having cold allergy. Now, technically works like any other allergen, and if you have cold allergy, you'll get the same similar symptoms as you would if you're allergic to bees or allergic to pollen or allergic to nuts, for instance. So that's similar sort of similar effects as those, as sort of similar treatment, as in allergy in general. So just the provision of antihistamines to the patients usually does a trick, and just avoiding the allergen, just like any other allergy out there. So if you're allergic to nuts, you avoid nuts. And if you're allergic to cold, you just stay in warm conditions. But once again, as you can imagine, how restrictive your life becomes if you suffer from such a condition. Once again, this is a rare disease out there. So it's not seen that much by people out there. Now, the next condition that I'll talk about will be... This is probably seen in documentaries, and a lot of people have seen images of this on YouTube, and have seen YouTube videos of this syndrome. It's called the tree man syndrome. And what appears to be tree bark growing out of someone's skin, this is actually a disease which isn't these growths are actually warts that can be exacerbated by exposure to sunlight. While these warts may be benign early in life, they can become malignant later in life, and they are caused by a rare mutation of the EVER1 and EVER2 genes. Though the function of these genes isn't really well understood, the mutations cause the skin to be extremely susceptible to human papillomavirus 5 and 8, which typically don't cause disease. While there are some treatment options available to mitigate the symptoms, there is no cure. Now, this again, this disease once again is a very life-limiting condition, and a lot of people in the tropical countries as well as some regions of Africa suffer from this disease. And I'll briefly share once again a little story of a person suffering from this condition, just so you get an idea of how their daily life works and how their daily life is affected pretty much. This is my shocking story, The Tree Man, The Cure, and his medical history, which was shown in Discovery TV. It's a short clip from a documentary.
This is the story of the search for a cure for 36-year-old Dede Binateng, known as Half Man, Half Tree.
Hello, Dede. I'm Dr. Gaspari. I'm here to help you get better.
When Dr. Gaspari met Dede, he took biopsy samples of his warts. Back in his lab, he made an amazing discovery.
Very interesting findings. This is really a unique case.
Tests reveal Dede's condition is no more than human papillomavirus or common warts. Normally, these warts would disappear eventually, but in Dede's case, they've spiraled out of control.
Because Dede does not have a normal immune system, his wart virus was able to flourish, and it evolved into this massive deforming infection.
As Dede has no immunity to warts, Dr. Gaspari hopes a vitamin A drug will stimulate Dede's antibody production and stop the virus reproducing. It may also allow the existing warts to drop off.
We could improve it to the point where he's able to move his hands and they're not quite as covered with the warts, make a fist.
But Indonesian doctors have an alternative plan for Dede, radical surgery.
Jadi kita ingin secepatnya dia dibuang itu tumornya. Itu yang kami mengapa tindakan bedah di segera dilakukan tindakan.
Dr. Rahmat will lead the team of Indonesian doctors. Unlike Dr. Gaspari's non-invasive plan, Dr. Rahmat is set on surgical removal of Dede's warts and horns.
In an individual with a poorly functioning immune system like Dede, surgery does not eradicate the wart infection. In other words, the warts come back, and that's exactly what's going to happen with him. And that's why the surgery is not the one and only answer.
Welcome back, guys. That was Dede's story, but there are many like him, and a lot of these sort of clips can be found on YouTube. So if you are interested in looking at the entire documentary, I'd highly recommend it, just to understand how difficult a person's life becomes, and to understand the human body as a whole. I guess is that we're all so similar, but at the same time, there's so many differences, minor differences, genetic differences between two individuals. And just imagining that somebody who has a mutation in one gene could have such severe effects on their entire life is absolutely amazing, in my opinion. And just to understand the human body and how it works, it's a brilliantly made it's brilliantly made, but at the same time, if anything goes wrong with any sort of genetic material in your body, or if, just considering so many diseases out there, and some of the rare ones that we don't see as a result of some minor genetic mutations, it's absolutely astonishing, in my opinion. But once again, people suffering from the tree man syndrome, it is quite a massive massive change in their lifestyles and what they can and they can't do. These warts do affect their lifestyle heavily, and that especially considering that these conditions, or this condition particularly, affects people who live in poor environments. You can imagine how difficult it will be for them to sort of manage their daily activities and have a normal life. Their way of normal living would be completely different to ours, and that's something that that should be understood. Next, I'll discuss about the vampire syndrome. Now, one thing I would like to mention is a lot of these names, the tree man syndrome, the vampire syndrome, they are sort of reflected to the nature of disease or the symptoms of disease. However, did you have a medical term as well for them, for the vampire syndrome, that's called xeroderma pigmentosum. And humans need sunlight to synthesize vitamin D, but too much of exposure to the sun's UV rays can damage the skin. And approximately 1 in 1 million people have vampire syndrome or xeroderma pigmentosum and are extremely sensitive to UV rays. These people must be completely shielded from sunlight or will experience extreme sunburns and breakdown of the skin. If someone with the condition isn't careful, they could easily develop skin cancer. Now, in my previous show, I discussed about skin cancer, and this is sort of if your immune system isn't sufficient enough. If you have xeroderma pigmentosum, then you'll be extremely susceptible to skin cancer. So, taking measures to protect yourself against the UV rays is something which is highly recommended for these people. Now, xeroderma pigmentosum is caused by a rare recessive mutation of the nucleotide excision repair enzymes. Functioning normally, these enzymes correct damaged DNA that can be caused by UV rays. For those who have these conditions, these enzymes do not work properly and the DNA damage persists and accumulates. While there are some treatments available, the best prevention from damage is merely staying completely out of sunlight, just like a vampire, hence the vampire syndrome. Now, I'll briefly mention that it's not just restricted to sunlight, but some of the fluorescent lighting available as well could be damaging to these people as well. So it just depends on the degree of the disease that you have. But now I'll briefly discuss a story of a little girl who has this condition, and we'll hear how her thoughts on this condition. And she's a nine-year-old girl who must avoid sunlight. And if you think about a person at that age, all you want to do is go outside, play outside with your friends. So once again, it affects quite heavily the way you live your life. And it's very restrictive. This girl is called Amy. She's 9 years old and has a rare skin disorder, which requires that she must avoid sunlight completely. So let's hear the interview of her by Anderson. Here's 9-year-old Amy.
What's this like for you?
It's difficult. It really is difficult because you're always thinking, well, can we stop at this restaurant? Can she go to this birthday party? Parents call me and say, you know, we want to do a birthday party at the bowling alley. Is it safe? I have to go. I have to drive across town. I have to light meter it. I have to talk to the business owner to make sure they'll turn certain lights off. So nothing's just hop in the car and go do something.
So even inside, it's not just sunlight?
Right. It's also man-made artificial light. So metal halide, halogen lights, fluorescent light bulbs. The only real safe light bulb is LED.
So what happens if it's above a 10?
Well, Amy's body's missing DNA in it. So if she's exposed to ultraviolet rays, then it's cumulative. So 2 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 10 minutes there, it all is cumulative, and she'll develop skin cancer.
Hmm. And Jeffrey, I mean, Amy's lucky that her friends know her and respect her, but you say adults are sometimes rude.
Yeah, they don't know, so they stare, or they have little comments like, isn't she a cute little beekeeper? I mean, it kind of looks like a beekeeper, but, you know, if you don't know, don't talk.
Yeah. What do you want people to know, Amy, about your condition?
Just if you have a question, ask it. Don't just, like, say rude comments or stare. It just hurts feelings.
This is very rare, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called xeroderma pigmentosum, XP. It is rare. I think about just 300 or so cases in the United States, 1,000 around the world. Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, if you think about it, your body is constantly in a state of you know, having these, you know, UV lights and other exposures attack our bodies, and our body's constantly repairing ourself. It's happening right now to you and me. But what happens in someone who has XP, there's different gene that just isn't repairing fast enough. So they get the UV light exposure, but the repair mechanisms don't kick in, and that's essentially what happens here. Sometimes it can be associated with other problems as well, but I guess not always. Right.
And some kids, 30% of children with XP have neurological deterioration. Amy doesn't carry that genetic break in her type of XP.
And in terms of research, because it's so rare, this can actually help other people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you think about skin cancers, and skin's the largest organ in the body. So there's lots of different types of cancers. When you have something that's this rare, it gives you an opportunity to study exactly what happens in a cancer like this. And I think more importantly, how can you stop those cancers from occurring? Could you turn on the fix mechanisms, you know, the repair mechanisms, so that you can prevent those cancers from ever developing? I mean, Amy could teach us some of that.
And skin cancer is something that I think a lot of people just don't. I had a skin cancer a couple of years ago, and it never occurred to me that, like, I'm the palest guy on the planet, I never go out in the sun, and yet people can get it.
Right. Anybody, any age, any race, and people don't realize that skin cancer is so easy to get. But when you have a skin cancer in a 16-month-old child, that's alarming, and that doesn't happen. But kids with XP get cancer so easily. So, like you said, it opens the door for research. Because if we take the children with XP and use their skin for research, we can possibly cure skin cancer for the general population.
And you have a website, xpfamilysupport.org?
Correct. And we help children around the world with XP. We provide UV light meters, window film, protection, educate families, work with doctors on helping children with this condition.
That was Amy's interview in Anderson's live show. Once again, you can imagine how restrictive a person's life can be if they suffer from such a condition, xeroderma pigmentosum. And there are, once again, loads of documentaries on all of these different conditions that I mentioned. So if you are interested in learning more about them and seeing how their lives are affected, I would highly recommend to you either go on YouTube and search for that particular disease, and you'll find loads of different documentary options that you could watch and have a look at. It teaches you quite a lot about how some people live their daily lives with these conditions. So I would highly recommend that. Next one, once again, is something which a lot of people have most likely seen on YouTube videos or has seen pictures of and wondered what is that. This one is called elephantitis, and it, basically what it is, it's a obstruction of lymphatic vessels which cause extreme swelling of skin and tissues, typically in the legs. And this disfiguring condition can be brought about in several ways, though a mosquito-borne parasite is the most common cause. Over 40 million people have been affected by the condition. There are medications available to kill the parasite, so early intervention will produce the best result. There are surgical options if the elephantitis affects some parts of the body but not the limbs. But once again, it is... this one, although it's a rare condition, it has affected quite a lot of people in Africa, considering it being a mosquito-borne parasite, which causes it. So as I mentioned, over 40 million people have been affected by this condition. And basically how it looks like is a person has their lower limbs will literally look like elephant limbs because of the obstruction of the lymphatic vessels and the extreme swelling of the skin and the tissues. You know, once again, this affecting people who live in poor conditions or underdeveloped countries. You can imagine the effects that they would have on their daily lives and how it will affect their family lives for trying to find cures for them and trying to find treatments. It will be very costly for them and at the same time for them to try to make a living. And having this condition, it is quite overwhelming for them. If you do wish to see images or videos or documentaries of such a condition, then I'd highly recommend to YouTube it and have a look at it and once again listen and empathize with the people who have this condition. Now the next one that I'm going to be talking about is called hypertrichosis, which is in English or in non-medical terms called as werewolf syndrome. This is while basically what happens in this one is that they have abnormal hair growth covering their bodies, faces. So people from this condition have abnormal hair growth throughout their bodies. Their faces are completely covered in long hair, which is why the condition has earned the nickname of werewolf syndrome. Now, hyperarthrosis can be either congenital or acquired. Those born with the condition can suffer from one of several known genetic mutations. Some who get the condition later in life acquired it as a side effect from anti-balding treatments. So be careful what you wish for if you want to make your hair grow back. Some of the side effects of that treatment might be this condition. Though there are some who do not have any obvious cause for this condition, but majority of them are as a result of either genetic mutations or as a result of side effects from anti-balding treatments. There are some treatment options which include traditional methods of hair removal, through even waxing and laser treatments. But once again, as these are genetic problems, these treatments are not long-lasting results. Now, here's a little clip of some people who suffer from this condition sharing their stories.
Seven-year-old Nat Sasupan is one in a billion. The doctor told us he'd never seen a child born like this before. She has congenital hypertrichosis, or Ambras syndrome. It's known as werewolf syndrome.
When people make fun of me, I feel sad.
In India, 11-year-old Prithviraj Patil is trying laser treatment. But his hair keeps growing back.
I just want to be like everyone else.
The Rout sisters suffer from a similar condition. Desperately poor and with marriage in mind, they simply cannot afford to be hairy. Now all these children's families are pinning their hopes for a cure on a new genetic breakthrough. Can the search for a cure for baldness help them to lose their hair?
That was the werewolf syndrome or hypertrichosis. Now, once again, people who have this condition are once again those in the underdeveloped countries, such as countries in India and some parts of China. So, once again, the way that it affects their lives is quite massive because when you're a child and you have that condition, all you want to be is normal, as one of them quoted previously. And when you walk around and people see you having hair all over your face, it is sort of a society, because they don't understand that it is a medical condition, they do make sort of a pinpoint and laugh about it, which is not something that people should do, obviously. But it once again shows how difficult the lives of people who have these conditions can be. Now, the next one is a bit of an odd one, but at the same time, this is a rare medical conditions episode. So all of these conditions are rare and something that we haven't heard before. This one is called aquagenic urticaria, which basically means water allergy. And as the majority of our body is made out of water, it seems odd that an allergy to it would even exist. Though it isn't a true allergy because it doesn't trigger a histamine response, there are some who develop itchy hives and welts even after mere minutes of water exposure. This condition is quite rare and the cause isn't well known. Some have speculated that the water itself isn't the cause, but rather specific chemicals or impurities that are ubiquitous within water. However, even purified water can trigger a reaction among some. The most common treatment is topical application of capsaicin, which is used to relieve the pain. Once again, water allergy, people suffering from water allergy, you can imagine how difficult their lives might be. Doing normal routine things in life will be much more difficult, like showering or walking out in the rain. These are, once again, very life-limiting factors. Finally, I have... actually, it's not finally. This is the second last, rare medical condition that I have in mind, that I'll be talking about, which is the alien hand syndrome. Now, the phrase "the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing" is actually literally true for some people. The condition involves a rogue hand that acts independently, grasping objects or moving in a way contrary to what the individual wishes to do. Sometimes a rare side effects of effect to brain injuries or surgical severing of the corpus callosum is the inability to control the actions of one hand. There is no cure for this condition, though the symptoms can be managed by making sure the hand is actively engaged in activity. So this is a condition where a person's hand, one hand, is literally out of control, and the person has no control over it. So it keeps moving, grasping things. It's completely independent of the other hand. And once again, you can imagine how limiting that can be for a person in their life. Finally, there's one more that I have that I would like to share with people. This will be the 10th rare medical condition I'll talk about. It's called the foreign accent syndrome. And accents can reveal a lot of information about where someone is from, and nearly everyone has tried to speak with an accent foreign to their native region. However, some people develop a condition that causes them to uncontrollably speak in a foreign accent, even if they have never visited that area before. Often several types of accents can be used at different times or may even be blended together. This rare disorder typically comes about as a side effect following stroke or other brain injury. The person with the condition not only changes the tone of voice, but will also change tongue placement during speech. The only treatment for this condition is extensive speech therapy to retain the brain to speak in a certain way. And I'll briefly share the story of a woman who woke up sounding Chinese. Here's her story and how foreign accent syndrome has affected her life.
Sarah has spent most of her life in Plymouth and had the accent to match until recently.
So, fish and chips. Chips. I say that right?
Yeah.
3.5 years ago, she was rushed into hospital with a migraine, which left her with a voice she didn't recognise.
I have not actually heard my voice in a conversation for nearly 3 years now.
Her initial response upon hearing how she used to sound from a bank telephone recording...
Good afternoon, thank you for calling.
..was to long for her old accent to return.
Yeah, I'm not actually ringing about my policy, though. I'm ringing for a quote. Do you still want my policy number?
I know it's me, but I feel like I want to say, oh, she make a... good speak. She speak a good, but like that, not me no more.
There's one picture you can see all the facts.
Sarah has been diagnosed with foreign accent syndrome. The condition has only 150 known cases worldwide.
although it's called foreign accent syndrome, it's literally a speech impediment. There's nothing foreign about it. Obviously I don't have a Chinese accent. I've never been to China. You'd have to spend a considerable amount of time in China to pick up the accent. So it's impossible. Deep mud, tough nut, night bus.
Although she doesn't know why this has happened, months of speech therapy with specialist Martin Duckworth at Marjohn's in Plymouth have provided some insights.
I actually feel quite comfortable with my speech now.
We can't give you any definitive answers about exactly what's happening, which is why we're following Sarah's journey. But some small changes happened within her brain, and they've had an impact on the way she organises her speech output.
I'm done. I'm finished.
Despite finding no answers or cure, Sarah has learned how to live with her new voice.
It took a long time to actually accept that I was the problem for me. I was the one making me feel bad.
Welcome back, guys. So that was foreign accent syndrome. And as out of a condition, it does seem it is a condition which people do suffer from. And imagine waking up in the morning and speaking a completely different accent that you have been used to, and hearing a completely different sort of voice, which is out of control. This also resembles of the Tourette syndrome that some people might know of. Now, just because we have a little bit more time, roughly 6 more minutes, I'll discuss 2 more medical conditions, and I'll briefly discuss what they are. The first one is called Fregoli syndrome. Now, Fregoli syndrome leads a person to believe that people he or she knows have adopted different appearance and assumed the bodies of total strangers. But rather than a complete change in appearance and possibly gender or ethnicity, the personality and identity of the acquaintance is perceived exactly the same as always. In some cases, patients believe the person's shape has shifted or is still shifting, while in other cases, the patient may believe the loved one's identity or personality has been replicated and inserted into another physical shell. If you had Fregoli syndrome, you might go to the post office and be surprised to learn that your mother had taken the form of the postal worker behind the counter. Even worse, as you exit the building, you would realize your mother has changed form again and is now the man exiting the car parked next to your own, as you summoned the police to report this. You would be dismayed to realize the two officers who show up to take your report are in fact your mother and your childhood neighbor. So having a Fregoli syndrome literally makes you think that the person that you're with, your acquaintance, your mother, your brother, that they have, they're basically shape-shifting constantly. Now, once again, these are quite medical conditions that you wouldn't see or hear of in daily life, such as cancer or any other thing, but these are conditions which affect people's life quite a lot. Now, the second one that I'll discuss about is known as progeria. Now, while scientists and researchers in capital search for the secrets of longevity, the answers may be found in the cure to one of the rare but heartbreaking diseases that result in premature aging and death among children. Now, this is called Hutchinson-Gilford progeria syndrome, also known as progeria. Now, children born with progeria look like perfectly healthy babies in the first year of life. However, by the time they turn 2, most children with this unusual condition begin to show signs of advanced aging. Not only do toddlers begin to look exactly like elderly adults with thinning hair and wrinkled faces, they also begin to suffer from age-related diseases and infirmities, such as hardening of the arteries, loss of body fat, age spots on the skin, achy joints, and bad hips. Kids with progeria share with seniors the same rates of cardiovascular disease and risk of stroke. Though they may live as long as 21, the average age of death is only 13. These are called the same. The usual cause for the death is the same as what kills majority of the seniors, and it's a heart disease. Now, progeria occurs when a genetic defect occurs in certain protein, lamin A, that's responsible for the structural integrity of a cell's nucleus. First documented in 1886 in England, progeria still has no cure, and related form of disease known as adult progeria can present symptoms in people by the time they turn 20, and though they are often able to live well into their 40s and even 50s. That was a medical condition called progeria. So as you can imagine, once again, a baby toddler looking like a 60 or 70 year old and suffering from the same medical conditions as them in the same rate is quite unusual, but at the same time you can imagine how much that would affect their parents and their family lives. So in short, once again, just to summarize the entire show, I discussed a little bit about the different medical conditions which are unusual or unheard of to normal public or to a majority of society. And these are things which are majority of the time documented quite well, and just because of the rarity of this disease, these diseases. And I'd highly recommend for people to look at these documentaries and just to understand how the human body sort of works, first of all, and what happens when certain things go wrong within the human body, within the genetic material, and how that could have a severe effect on a person's life. Not only just the genetic factors, but also what the injury could do to your person. And if you have sort of a brain damage, how much that could change your personality. There's loads of cases of brain injury associated with memory loss, or brain injury associated with change of characteristics of a person. And foreign accent syndrome was one of those sort of situations or medical conditions. But there are loads of these rare conditions out there that I think it's very good for people to know and be aware of. Because there's roughly 7 billion people on the planet, and it'll be good to understand how the variety of different diseases out there, and the variety of different people, and the, what the human body can and can't do. All these factors are very very sort of well to understand and know of. That was our show for today, guys. Thank you all for listening, and talk to you guys next week.